This is Doug Gillard of Guided by Voices, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, all about redistricting this morning. As last week, Democrats approved a plan to change the district lines for congressional offices in New York State, as well as the state Senate and state assembly. Now it's been signed by the governor and approved, and it's being challenged in court by Republicans, so we'll see if it stays. We'll hear about it today in the WGXC Congressional Report, how it affects Antonio Delgado and Paul Tonko and the folks that are challenging them for Congress this year. We'll also hear from Assemblyperson John McDonald in Albany and about their redistricting in his district and other Capital Region districts. On the WGXC Morning Show, stay tuned. It all begins after the local news, which is next.
This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-I's into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Natasha Von Holdridge is reporting for Columbia Green Media that some parents of students enrolled in the Ichabod Crane Central School District are threatening to sue Superintendent Suzanne Guntlow for following the state mask requirement. Several people who addressed the board during its February 1st public meeting spoke about the legal action they plan to take. Quote, the papers that were served basically are indicating the possibility of a legal action, unquote, Guntlow said. Quote, and we, as always, would work with our school attorneys to respond to any claim which we feel has absolutely no merit, unquote. School districts across the state have been advised to follow the guidelines issued by the state education department until the appeal of a court-ordered stay is resolved. Guntlow said. Quote, I know that there's individuals who are very vocal that want us to discontinue the mask wearing, but it's not a local decision. Unfortunately, for every person that wants to remove the mask, there's another person that wants us to continue that practice, unquote, she said. Several of the public who spoke during the meeting were members of Unmask Ichabod Crane, a Facebook group started by Derek Williams. Williams, at the meeting last week, said he did not start the group to cause turmoil. Instead, he said it was started for concerned parents who feel masks are a health issue, whether mentally or physically. Several speakers threatened to sue Guntlow personally if she did not reject the state-required mask policy. Quote, in my opinion, this is child abuse. Whether you agree or not at this point doesn't matter, unquote, parent Rick Lawrence said at the meeting. Another parent, Krishna Culver, said, quote, I'm tired of the rhetoric. I'm tired of hearing about all the clinics that you're offering up to 5 to 11-year-olds, unquote, Culver said. Quote, anyone in our community has a doctor, and they can go get vaccinated if they want, and they can bring their child. It is not your job to be giving us this information, and I would like it to stop, unquote. Jessica Brown accused Guntlow of violating her oath of office and the constitutions of New York and the United States. Quote, unmask our children now, unquote, Brown said. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
Liz Montgomery reports for Porcupine Soup that on February 2nd, Greene County Public Health Director Kimberly Kaplan made a rare public appearance during the COVID-19 pandemic, telling members of the Greene County Legislature that wearing masks during a global pandemic of an airborne virus saves human lives. The legislators asked many questions that have been long settled by scientists. Legislator Matthew Lavera, a Republican from Catskill, wanted to know about herd immunity. Kaplan said, and I quote, there is always discussion of that, but we aren't there yet, end quote. Michael Bulich, another Republican from Catskill, equated COVID-19 to the common cold, while coronavirus causes far more death and has long-term effects. Kaplan said to the legislators pushing back on wearing face coverings, and I quote, by definition, this is airborne. Masking is a part of a general layered approach which they said from the beginning. It does afford them some level of protection, end quote. While other leaders and health officials of surrounding counties held public forums and answered questions from citizens during the pandemic, Greene County officials have not held similar public information events. And read more about this story at Porcupine Soup.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics in his bid for the Democratic nomination for governor. New York City public advocate Jumaane Williams was endorsed February 4th by the progressive nonprofit Citizen Action. Williams said he believes the endorsement, in addition to other support announced last week, will help build some momentum behind his campaign in advance of the state Democratic convention, which begins February 16th. What I believe people are just now starting to begin over the next 4 to 8 weeks, starting to pay attention to this race, so getting this momentum at this moment in time couldn't be a better time period, unquote, Williams said. But it's going to begin to send a message of very real alternative to the way things have been operating for a long time, unquote. Williams is challenging incumbent Governor Kathy Hochul for the Democratic nomination. Hochul also faces a challenge from Representative Tom Suozzi. The party primary is scheduled for June. Citizen Action New York President Yvette Alfonso said, quote, we really feel that it's important that we have someone in office who really champions those values and is not beholden to the real estate interests, to the pharmaceuticals, to hedge funds, and really put forth the voice of the working class people in this state, unquote. Williams last challenged Hochul in a primary for lieutenant governor in 2018. He has since been elected New York City public advocate. Hochul was elevated to the governor's office in August. Williams is pledging to make the state more equitable and address issues ranging from climate change to criminal justice. Quote, we really have to lean into a vision of who we have to vote for, unquote, Williams said. Quote, I keep hearing people want to go back to normal from before the pandemic. Normal didn't work for most New Yorkers, so what I want most New Yorkers to realize is that we can't go back to normal. We shouldn't go back to normal, unquote. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Kenneth C. Crow II reports in the Times Union that lawyers for Rensselaer County Executive Steve McLaughlin now have 30,000 pages of records from the state attorney general's office as part of discovery in the criminal case alleging misuse of campaign funds in 2017. McLaughlin made his first court appearance February 3rd since he was arraigned on December 1st, 2021. That comes after a Rensselaer County grand jury indicted McLaughlin with grand larceny and offering a false instrument for filing for allegedly stealing $5,000 from his campaign account on November 21, 2017. That was just weeks after winning his first election for county executive. His attorney, Ben Hill, said February 3rd that he was preparing a motion to dismiss the indictment against McLaughlin for, and I quote, a lack of sufficient evidence, end quote. Assistant Attorney General Chris Baines told Judge Jennifer Sober that he was ready for trial, and Sober set a March 21st deadline for defense motions. McLaughlin, a Republican, continues to say he will win the case but did not speak during the court proceedings February 3rd. McLaughlin is accused of using campaign funds to pay $3,500 to a former member of his state assembly staff, Jennifer Polaro. A check for $5,000 was drawn from the campaign account in November 2017 to Hudson Valley Strategies, which is run by Richard Crist, a county Republican political operative who works on McLaughlin's county staff as director of operations. Crist then deposited the check, the indictment claims, and wrote a $3,500 check to pay Polaro. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
And the Berkshire Eagle is reporting that Second Street Second Chances, an initiative to support formerly incarcerated people in Berkshire County, Massachusetts, was awarded a $240,000 grant from the Commonwealth on February 3rd. Berkshire Community College intends to start the program as, quote, a one-stop facility that will offer comprehensive wraparound support services, case management, and workforce training opportunities to formerly incarcerated individuals in order to reduce rates of recidivism in Berkshire County, unquote, according to the statement. The college will work on the program with the Berkshire County Sheriff's Office, the county jail, as well as the House of Correction to, quote, provide integrated support services that will help to provide the encouragement, motivation, basic life skills, and lifelong learning educational opportunities to former inmates as they seek to successfully reenter their communities as productive citizens, unquote. The state announced the funding through the Community Empowerment and Reinvestment Grant Awards, which were given to 62 organizations in 17 different cities and towns, according to a statement from state officials. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
In other news, Governor Kathy Hochul signed the Democrats' redistricting plan February 3rd after it passed in both the Assembly and the State Senate. Republicans, angered by the gerrymandered redistricting, are suing to get the district lines redrawn. On February 2nd, the Greene County Legislature approved the recommendations of the Catskill Republican Committee and appointed Jay Lucas, 67, to the legislature to fill the vacancy left by Jack Keller, who passed away in late December. If you plan to vote in the June primary elections in New York but want to change your party registration first, February 14th is the deadline this year. Applications to change one's party enrollment for any primary election in 2022 must be received by the Board of Elections no later than February 14th, 2022.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 20% chance of rain or snow showers before 3 p.m. on Monday. Then mostly cloudy skies with a high of 36 during the day and a low around 25 Monday night. Tuesday, again, there's a 20% chance of rain or snow showers in the afternoon with partly sunny skies, a high of 37 and a low around 15. Wednesday should be mostly sunny with a high near 40 and a low around 24. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. Monday, February 7th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at WGXC. including at 9 a.m. The WGXC Morning Show features the WGXC Congressional Report with all you need to know about what's been going on with representatives from the New York 19 and New York 20 congressional districts and the candidates who want to replace those representatives. At 10 a.m., tune in the Afrosonic Taxi with tracks from Pat Kala, La Mambra Negra, Ando Tropica, and others. And then 11 a.m., we take a Jamaican vacation with Brendan Donegan, who's playing favorites in the WGXC studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street in Hudson. That's until noon, when it's time for the Deep Three show with tracks from David S. Ware, Kirsten Johnson, Manucho Bento, and others. Then at 2 p.m., it's time for Vital Weekly with brand new music from around the world, including works from Vertonin, Stefan Asterzo, and Kat Hernandez, among others. At 4 p.m., Kieran Riley hosts the WGXC Afternoon Show from Western Massachusetts. And then Assemblyperson John McDonald talks about the latest redistricting on altogether now at 6 p.m., the local news show from WGXC on 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Catskills' Brian DeWan has his annual Valentine's Day show this year on Sunday, February 13th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. Turn out Sunday, February 13th at 8 p.m. at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, or tune in to a live web stream at WGXC.org. Click on the Listen button at the top of any WGXC.org webpage and scroll down to find the live webcast of Brian DeWan's Valentine's show with songs of love and devotion throughout the centuries on accordion, electric, zither, and other instruments. His performance is live at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, Sunday, February 13th at 8 p.m. and online at WGXC.org.
A wondrous thing, the human heart.
On the next Deep Threes, we'll hear a piece from Danish trumpeter Polly Mickelborg's tribute to Miles Davis that was inspired by the colors of the legend's aura, plus exotic sounds from Makanuchi Bento, Yan Lin Chen, and Tatiana Koleva. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, February 7th. 10.4% of the way through the year and 41 days left until spring. Early this morning, we see 11 degrees in East Bern and 19 degrees in Smithfield. Things will warm up a bit today. A high of 36 is expected at 3 p.m. Light, spotty snow will be around this morning, turning to rain this afternoon, then back to snow after dark. This will be happening much more in Columbia County than it will be in Greene. Less than a half inch is expected in all. Overnight temperatures fall to 28 degrees. Tomorrow will be dry with a high of 39 degrees. Overnight, we'll see a drop to 18 degrees before bouncing back up to 40 Wednesday afternoon. Thursday, it's even warmer with a high of 44. And Friday, things start to cool a little bit, dropping below 40 degrees for the high, but it will be dry. Sunset today will be at 5:02 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:58 a.m. Looking way up, we see a coronal mass ejection is expected to arrive on Thursday. The flare that launched it was a weak C-class flare, however, it did last long enough to pump some energy into it, so who knows what's going to arrive. Solar wind speed is currently 515 kilometers per second at 11 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 MHz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 83. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. If you happen to have any questions or suggestions, please send them on in to weather@wgxe.org.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of James Graylian. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXE sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxe.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Am I you or are you me?
You are a happy person, full of imaginative thoughts which pour forth constantly. Each day you feel more lovable, more interesting. You become more interested in others. You recognize and accept the friendship that people offer you, for you truly deserve it. You have a deep and sincere respect for yourself and for your personal worth to others. It is easy for you to accept the help and cooperation of others. You see their help to you as an expression of mutual friendship and understanding. You now realize that giving and receiving are two sides of a single coin. You're aware of the trust and confidence you generate in others, and it makes you feel good. You think of yourself as a warm, generous, and loving person. You easily express love and affection, and you find it easy to accept love and approval. You like yourself because you are a friendly and giving person. You accept yourself as a unique and valuable person. You're open, honest, and direct in your relations with people. You recognize that you are exceptionally talented and highly creative. This awareness makes you feel good.
Here's a 2022 track from the British artist Scanner from his album Structura Revisited. This is The Earthbound Fox on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
I'm Tom Rowe with WGXC in Acre with this week's WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 19th and 20th congressional seats in New York. Current Democratic Representatives Antonio Delgado and Paul Tonko vote with the positions of President Joe Biden 100% of the time, according to the 538.com website.
The world is in its third year of a deadly virus that has taxed healthcare workers like no others. At the same time, members of Congress, including Paul Tonko locally, have signed on to a letter to get the federal government to cap nurses' pay. HealthAffairs.org reports that, and I quote, an unprecedented number of nurses are retiring early and exiting the workforce or quitting their hospital employment to return as employees of staffing agencies, end quote. Tonko and other representatives see rising wages for nurses as a problem. The letter to White House COVID Response Team Coordinator Jeffrey Zients says, and I quote, we are writing because of our concerns that certain nurse staffing agencies are taking advantage of these difficult circumstances to increase their profits at the expense of patients and the hospitals that treat them, end quote. The almost 200 congressional representatives signing on to the letter are a mixed lot, with far-right figures such as Elise Stefanik, conservative Republican Liz Cheney, centrist Democrat Tonko, and liberal Ilhan Omar all in favor. Nurses, however, mostly do not want their salaries capped. There is evidence that nursing wages are up, like in many other fields with high demand for workers. The American Healthcare Association last year sent a letter to the Federal Trade Commission urging the FTC to protect consumers from anti-competitive and unfair practices regarding agency staffing. Tonko, who represents all of Albany County and other parts of the Capital District, was not joined by Hudson Valley Democrat Antonio Delgado nor Sean Maloney in signing the letter. Representative Antonio Delgado on January 30th joined the chorus calling for a ban on members of Congress trading stocks. Representative Abigail Sandberger, a Democrat from Virginia, and Representative Chip Roy, a Republican from Texas, introduced a measure to ban members of Congress from trading stocks last year after revelations that several Republicans used insider knowledge of the COVID-19 pandemic in its early days to buy stocks in companies likely to do well through the coronavirus outbreak. The bill got little traction until Democrat Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, came out against the proposal. That incited support from both sides of the aisle. Now there is a similar bill in the Senate and momentum to pass something. The bills would require members of Congress, their spouses, and dependent children to place their stocks in a blind trust while the member is in office. Lawmakers often have access to privileged information, and these bills would attempt to quash efforts to make money on that insider knowledge. Delgado said in a January 30th tweet, and I quote, this is a bipartisan, bicameral effort that I am proud to be a part of. Members of Congress should work to represent the communities, not to turn a profit, end quote. Colby Ikowitz and Adrian Blanco report in the Washington Post that New York Democrats unveiled the redistricting maps for Congress on January 30th, and the proposal boosts the chances of Democrat Antonio Delgado in the 19th Congressional District. Democrats could win an additional 3 seats in Congress if the plan is voted on and signed by Governor Kathy Hochul later this week as expected. Delgado's 19th congressional district adds Binghamton and Utica under the plan, moving the district from one that President Joe Biden won by 1.5% to one where Biden won by 10 points. That comes at a bit of the expense of Democrat Paul Tonko's 20th congressional district, which moves from a Biden plus 20.5 district to one where Biden won by 17.3 points as part of Albany County's switch to the 19th district. New York lost one congressional seat in the latest census count. A 10-member, supposedly independent commission, where 8 members were appointed by partisan legislative leaders, could not reach a decision on district lines, so the legislature has taken over the process. Blair Horner, executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, which opposes partisan gerrymandering from either party, said, and I quote, "This is not a good night for New York Republicans," end quote. Democrats and Republicans had differing opinions on the redistricting proposals. David Imamura, the Democratic chairman of redistricting, said, and I quote, "I'm thrilled with the maps that have come down. They listened to the public input the commission received, and I think that's reflected in these maps," end quote. Nick Langworthy, chairman of the New York State Republican Committee, said, and I quote, "These maps are the most brazen and outrageous attempt at rigging the election to keep Nancy Pelosi as speaker," end quote. Read more about this story in the Washington Post. More information continues to come out about the proposal for congressional redistricting from the New York legislature, including maps of what could be the new district. The biggest changes locally include Rensselaer County, which was previously entirely in the 19th congressional district, but would now be split in half, with everything above North Greenbush, Sand Lake, and Berlin switching to the 21st congressional district, currently represented by Republican Elise Stefanik. Albany County was previously all the 20th congressional district, now represented by Democrat Paul Tonko. The new proposal moves Albany County towns Coeymans and Bethlehem from the 20th district to the 19th district, currently represented by Antonio Delgado. Schoharie County moves entirely from the 19th to the 21st congressional district under the proposal. And only the northwest corners of Dutchess County remains in the 19th congressional district, with the rest of Dutchess County moving to the 18th congressional district, now represented by Sean Maloney. Redistricting occurs every 10 years after the census, and an independent redistricting commission was supposed to do that work. But that body was designed by the legislature to be toothless, so when they failed to agree on new district maps, the legislature took over, proposing these maps. Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, who is running in the 19th congressional election this year, called the redistricting process led by Democrat state lawmakers, and I quote, "a scam to begin with. The Democrats in the legislature wanted to control the outcome," end quote. He told reporters on January 31st, and I quote, "At the end of the day, I am hopeful the courts will step in because this is a blatant effort to gerrymander for no other purpose," end quote. The New York State Constitution states, and I quote, "Districts shall not be drawn to discourage competition or for the purpose of favoring or disfavoring incumbents or other particular candidates or political parties," end quote. But the courts have never turned down a map approved by the legislature. Jeffrey Weiss, who heads the New York Census and Redistricting Institute, said, and I quote, "The state courts are really going to be reluctant to overturn a state legislatively enacted map," end quote. But even if the courts agree to the new maps, that does not mean they are fair. Susan Lerner, executive director of Common Cause New York, said in a statement, and I quote, "These lines are so heavily gerrymandered, they will be non-competitive. It is a major disservice to voters who were first denied any hope of a truly independent process 10 years ago when the so-called independent commission was conceived," end quote. The legislature plans to vote on the proposal later this week. The Daily Freeman reports that Representative Antonio Delgado had $5 million more in campaign funds than Republican challenger Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro in their 19th congressional district election. Molinaro must defeat Republican Brandon Bukola in a June primary to face off against Delgado, who so far does not have any challenges from his party. Delgado ended the year with $5,480,936.71 in cash on hand, according to the Federal Elections Commission. Molinaro, who began his campaign in September, had $423,619.64. Delgado is completing his second term after beating Republican John Faso in 2018. Both candidates live in Dutchess County, with Delgado in Rhinebeck and Molinaro in Red Hook, while serving his third four-year term as Dutchess County executive. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Assembly member, thank you so much for talking with me.
Good morning, Corrine. How are you?
Good, good. The Hudson Mohawk Magazine has covered the redistricting process that New York State just went through several times. But I think even for people who are somewhat familiar with redistricting, you know, it's a process that takes place every 10 years. And the state was set to do it a little bit differently this time. And some things that were aspirational, I think that some good government groups have talked about on our show, didn't really work out. I'm going to show my age right now by saying that I'd like you to give me the TV Guide version instead of the Cliff Notes version, because, you know, we have limited time. But can you give me the TV Guide version of what the redistricting process was supposed to be and what how it ended up in New York?
Well, in 2014, we the legislature sent to the public a referendum to vote on what we all intended to be an independent redistricting commission. And that's what we did. That's what the voters supported. As you know, there was a little bit of rub, geez, going back a little bit over a year ago, because at the time the funding wasn't truly in place to support the IRC. I think people forgot about that. And we fought in the budget last year to make sure that there was $4 million for the IRC to have its staff, to have its technology and all that it needed to be truly independent. And off they went independently. And, you know, I was very hopeful. I knew both chairs. I knew some of the members on both sides of the aisle, people who I've respected and known throughout my 20 plus years in government. And unfortunately, even after several public hearings throughout the state and after several public comment periods, a couple months ago, they delivered two different maps. And their charge was to deliver one set of maps. So it was no surprise that first week in January, when we came back into session, that there was almost unanimous support on both sides of the aisle rejecting the proposal because they failed in their duty. And we did that because we're required to do by the law, with the message that went back that day that we voted it down saying, hey, you got 15 more days, let's get it done right. And unfortunately, the commission did not respond. And that was January 25th, 26th. So, you know, we got to look at the fact that the election year calendar, because we have June primaries and November elections, we need to have the election districts in place by the first week of February. So that way, when individuals go out to petition and run for office on March 1st, they know where they're going. Because otherwise, that's a huge disadvantage, particularly for those people who are challenging for a seat. So the intention was, okay, the commission failed in its duty. The legislature still has the responsibility of doing the redistricting. We went through the process. And I will say this, as much as you may not hear this too often, I was pleased and surprised to see bipartisan support for those bills being passed. It wasn't unanimous by any stretch of the imagination, not trying to be misleading, but, you know, as much as we all talk about the Democrats are in control, the Democrats are in control, there are many members, at least in the assembly, on the Republican side, who voted for this.
I just want to clarify, there was bipartisan support for rejecting the commission's proposals or for these new lines?
There was unanimous support for rejecting the commission's work. Unanimous, except for maybe two or three people who always vote no on the Republican side. On the passage of the bills yesterday, when it came to the state legislative lines, there was Democrats and Republicans voting in support. Not all the Republicans, to be very clear. There are many that were standing on principles, which is fine. That's what we're supposed to be here to do. But there are many Republicans who actually supported these new state legislative districts. And I don't think that gets told enough.
Well, I think you're right about that. I mean, just to be clear for our listeners, these new lines were drawn by the legislature. The bills were passed by both the Assembly and the Senate, and the governor has now signed them. So we have new district lines. Is that right?
That's right. We have new district lines that do not take effect to January 1st, 2023, but we needed to do them now so that individuals who are considering running for office or running for re-election know where their district boundaries are. And those will be the boundaries that they run on office for the November elections.
Gotcha. So notwithstanding the fact that there were some Republicans, I don't know if you know the number offhand, who voted for these new lines, there are still claims of what is called gerrymandering. Can you briefly say what gerrymandering is and how do you respond to those claims?
Yeah. So gerrymandering is basically going to some extreme to set up a district so that it would favor an individual or disfavor an individual.
Or disfavor a party.
Well, or disfavor a party. Now, to be clear, I've been around this for 21 years now. I can't say I paid attention to redistricting on the congressional level very closely until this last cycle. But if you talk to the historians around here, the last time we had a redistricting, it was both Senate Republicans and Assembly Democrats that did the maps. And there was talk, there's been talks of gerrymandering going on for decades and generations. If you listen to the Senate debate from yesterday, the sponsor of the bill, Senator Gennaris, and actually Andrea Stewart Cousins make a very interesting argument. Their focus on these maps was to make sure that there was equitable distribution. And they were pointing out that for decades, the Senate Republicans would have upstate districts of 260,000 people and downstate would be 360,000 people. And they've narrowed the gap to try to make each district 320,000 people. Now, the challenge with that, as you know, as an upstate person, is that it kind of puts upstate a little bit more at a disadvantage because now there's two additional Senate districts in the city of New York. That's where the growth has been over the past decade, and we can't ignore that. And if you look at the basic principles of redistricting, it's about making sure that we have common communities, common interests, but we also look at numbers to make sure that there's equity to represent, you know, the numbers throughout the state. But listen, the discussion of what's fair and equitable is a tortured conversation for generations, and it will continue on for generations as well. And as you already know, a lawsuit's already been filed as of late last night, and this will be argued out in the courts.
Well, we've only got about 2 or 3 minutes left, and I know you've got to get back to work, but I notice from the new maps that you are not only going to be my assembly member moving forward, but you'll also be representing the area where the Sanctuary for Independent Media is located in North Central Troy. So what are your priorities for the coming year?
Well, first of all, let me say that, you know, it's great that I now have the whole city of Troy and the town of East Greenbush. I have my misgivings a little bit because I've really worked hard with the residents of the city of Albany and built great relationships and partnerships. But at the same token, I'll always be supporting the city of Albany because our state capital city needs to be strong because it makes our region strong. From a priority perspective, you know, my priorities don't change too dramatically. The reality is when you look at the district now, it is very common interest. You have old industrial communities, hardworking middle-class folks that really want to be treated fairly and equitably, want to make sure that we focus on their quality of life issues. So housing opportunities, you know, obviously there's a lot of discussion going on about good cause eviction. It's a discussion we need to have to make sure that landlords don't take advantage of tenants, but we also have to make sure that there's equal footing for everybody. We need to be focusing on issues such as education and higher education, which is a very big issue, whether it's proper funding for K-12 or just as importantly, helping many of our young professionals who are struggling with some extremely high interest rates on college debt. I push to lower a couple few percentage points because it takes that debt down dramatically, but it's a difficult conversation. And as you know, as one of the only two healthcare professionals in the legislature, I have a very heightened focus on the opioid crisis that still continues to plague our communities, but also I am very much involved overall in healthcare policy. You know, there's a large discussion going on about universal healthcare and single payer. It's a much longer discussion. The reality is we all agree everyone should have equal opportunity to get good quality, accessible health insurance. But how do we do it and make sure we have the proper providers in place, particularly in our disadvantaged communities? I see this more than ever before. You know, you don't see medical office buildings being built in the south end of Albany or in North Central Troy, not large ones. No, the individuals in those communities struggle to connect to the healthcare system. I've really been more focused on it and more aware of it because of the fact that in my volunteer time, I've been able to do a lot of vaccination clinics, particularly in Troy and in Arbor Hill, Latino population, the South End. And there's individuals who are coming in that, thank God for the community leaders that I have relationships with. We've been able to run these clinics. These individuals, every time I go home, I say to myself, we did some good things today, because these individuals are just not connected to the healthcare system. They would have never gotten vaccinated except for the fact that people that they know, people who look like them, helped us meet them where they're at.
Well, you are truly a dedicated public servant. I've watched what you've been doing since the pandemic hit, and we're grateful for that.
Well, Corinne, thanks for the opportunity as always, and enjoy these conversations, and I know there's more to follow.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Thank you.
This is Organic Grooves, William Parker and Hamid Drake with All Between. Here is 2022 music from Animal Collective. Their new album is called Time Skiffs, and this is the track Walker.